Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day, everybody, and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett, and today we are talking those players who underperformed when we drafted them, and hopefully if they can get back to some sort of respectability in terms of scoring for the 2018 season. And as always, to do that is Stevie Fizz. Welcome, pal.
Yeah, hello to the boys, and hello, listeners. Hope you're doing pretty well out there. I just want to throw out a massive thank you to all the listeners who have got on board and given us a rating or review on iTunes. And well, I mean, you know, all the formats, but especially iTunes. We know it helps in our search brand, but we've finally raised the bat and got to 50 ratings and reviews, and I just can't say thanks enough. It means so much to everyone who enjoys the show.
Yeah, especially to the person who gave us 2-star rating as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Was that you,
Steve? It was actually me. I don't rate you pricks at all.
And welcome to you, but we almost didn't have a show today as someone did pull the electrical cord out of the power station in Tasmania, but all is back to normal, and welcome to you, Statesman.
But it's fantastic to be here. Sorry, gentlemen, I'm a bit in and out, and I do apologise if I quiver a little bit and my voice sounds a bit poor today. The mouse jumped out of the wheel, and we've been struggling for power for about 6 hours, and for some odd reason, seeing it's still the middle of winter in Tasmania, it is freezing cold tonight. And that's why my voice might be shimmering. I have got the heaters on, but they've only been on for about 15 minutes.
Man,
but it's great to be here.
Shorts and T-shirts, weather in Victoria at the moment. Great. Balmy 29 degrees on Saturday. It's been about 20 degrees today. Fantastic.
Jeez. I think it got up to 12 not so long ago, actually. That was a peak for us.
But a bit of news out over the weekend. We do know the Tigers are into the grand final against the Crows. What's amazing to me is the stat that came out after the game is that no player lining up in this game on the weekend has had a player in the grand play in the grand final before since the very first grand final. I thought that's amazing.
That is pretty amazing. And just quickly, if anyone has a spare grand final ticket, I did promise our friends, Jono, your brother, and one of our other league mates, Costa, he's been on the show before. They're Richmond members, been members for years, missed out on the ballot. So if anyone has the hookup, hit us up. We'll get you in the listener league. It's a big prize.
They just want to get there.
We have a platform. We said we'd ask. So, you know, if you have a hookup, please. But there's a good stat, Jono.
Yeah, no scalping tickets, please, either. We want legit tickets.
Legit.
But I don't know if you caught this over the weekend, but Callum Ward missed the flight back to Sydney because he and Toby Green were chosen for a random drug test. And because Toby Green did nothing for the whole game, he was fine and did his urine test on the flight. But Callum Ward, because he tried to win the game, was so dehydrated, couldn't pee in the cup, and missed the flight back to Sydney. So spent the night with family, friends at a club function back in our Melbourne hotel. So all's well that ends well. But he did get back on the flight. So I thought that was quite interesting that he couldn't actually pee in the cup after the game and missed his flight.
Well, poor fellow. But, I mean, that's the regiment we need to go through, and there's a good reason why they go through that process. But I hope who paid for him to stay and change flight? Did anyone take charge of that, or is that just left to the club bad luck?
Bad luck, I think, because they only had a very small window because they just wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. So it was a very tight time frame there for the team to get on the flight back to Sydney. So
you should never have windows if you've got Richmond supporters around. That's the bottom line.
That's true. But I don't know if you guys saw it, but the TAC grand final, the Sandford grand final, the VFL grand final, all decided by a goal or less, and a couple of them after the grand final. So hopefully that's just a curtain raiser to what we see on the weekend. Maybe Tex Walker after the siren to drive the dagger into the hearts of Richmond supporters. Who knows? But don't shake your head, Steve. Don't shake your head.
It's just interesting that equalisation is kicking in at all the lower levels, but all the AFL grand finals have been decided by like 7 goals aside from one. So,
And guys, get the champagne ready because Zach Dawson is a premiership player playing for Peel Thunder in the Waffle on the weekend. Amazing stats for his game. 1 goal, 1 kick, 1 handball, 1 mark, 1 hit out. 15 AFL fantasy points. Well done to Zach Dawson on your final game of semi-professional football.
Oh, well done. Hey, look, he lasted longer than a lot of people did. Good on him.
That is true. And if you are enjoying the show, we are on social media where you can check us out on Twitter where we are at The Draft Doctors, at Statesman33. We are on Instagram and we got a very nice message saying that they're not too impressed with the Johnny Butch post. So that is only 50% of the content. So, but then
was it from Johnny Butch?
No, it wasn't.
Jesus.
But they want some millennial savvy kid to techno whiz to get us to run the account, and that's actually probably not a bad idea. Or my wife, who is very Instagram savvy.
Well, I was going to say, do we have? Does anyone fit the demographic of Instagram savvy millennial posty kitty type? Doesn't sound like any of us.
No.
Those crusty old bastards. Well, I don't want to speak for you guys, but...
Oh, no, I'm a crusty old bastard too. We are on Facebook as well. Search The Draft Doctors there and the website, thedraftdoctors.com.au. But we are talking underperformers, those who we drafted with high hopes of taking us to the promised land of a fantasy grand final win. But sadly, these guys didn't live up to the expectations. And just to run through it, I'll be going through the defenders, Steve as usual with the forwards, and Statesman with the midfield ruck line. And Steve, fire it away, pal.
Yeah, okay, so as usual, I've got the hardest line known to man, the forwards. And I just, before I get into my forwards, I want to qualify the forwards I've chosen. These forwards had to be chosen within the top 100 picks by ADP and Ultimate Footy for me. To be an underperformer, you really have to have high expectations. Interestingly enough, there was only 20 forwards drafted with an ADP under 100. Now, because we're thinking about next year, I didn't want to choose anyone who was going to retire, a la your Nick Riewoldt, who was the second drafted forward by ADP. So we're not talking about him. And we're not talking about forwards who are probably going to lose forward status, a la your Isaac Smith, a la your Tuk Miller, despite the fact that they obviously vastly underperformed. And also, I'm discounting injury, like your Cyril Rioli, because I just, quite frankly, don't think it's particularly fair to talk about busts in that particular manner. So the first forward who incredibly underperformed was one of our favourites. We had high hopes going into the season. That's handsome Tom Lynch from the Gold Coast Suns. ADP of 73, that had him drafted as the 10th forward overall on Ultimate Footy, which is a dream team-based scoring format. So in Supercoach formats, God knows where he might have gone. He might have even been the first forward drafted. We obviously went Jono in our league of record quite early. I think we were in the second round.
Second or third round, yeah.
Yeah, second round, so very early. But by average, in Supercoach, he was a low-end F3. In Dream Team, he was an F4, meaning he finished in the 40s by average. So, I mean, that was not a great return on value at all. Now, my question is, was it really as bad as it all appeared for Handsome Tom? Now, by average, he went 80 Dream Team and 85 Supercoach. So he was down 6 Dream Team and 8 Supercoach points per game. But the expectation, to me, he was drafted with this expectation that he was going to be the premier key forward. Would that be fair to say, guys?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. So part of that was that he wasn't he had the 91 Dream Team and 86 Dream Team and 93 Supercoach, and he was expected to take the next step, hashtag, to and be an absolute premium for our fantasy, and he regressed. Part of that was Gold Coast didn't actually get any better. They ranked 14th both seasons, 2016 and 2017, with 48 inside 50s per game. So that can't help you. If your team's not getting the ball in there as a key forward, you cannot improve. And across the board, Handsome Tom's stats were pretty similar. They were slightly down in possession, slightly down marks, slightly down goals. That was actually a little bit better in tackles. But for me, this is where the giant discrepancy came from. Contested marks and marks inside 50. Now, his contested marks per game halved from 2.8 to 1.4. If you're not taking the contested marks as a key forward, that's not great for your super coach especially. And obviously in Dream Team, it's not great either. But marks inside 50, if they're down from, as they were for Tom, from 3.5 to 2.2, that's more than one mark per inside 50 you're taking less per game. That means it's a possession less. That means it's most likely a shot on goal less per game. At home, he was actually pretty good. Minus the two games he played in the bucketing rain, he averaged 93 Dream Team points per game from seven games. And that's against stiff opposition. So I think there is light at the end of the tunnel. The big question is, what happens with Gold Coast? We know they're facing a change of coach. Do they become more defensive? Does that mean less inside 50s? Does their midfield improve? Does the quality improve? We know Tom Lynch is a quality operator. I think the potential's still there because we've seen that he still does perform, but there's also a chance that he doesn't get any better. I'm torn on what his prospects are for next year. I think he'll probably be a value because he'll slip down the pecking order in terms of where he gets drafted. But there is also the possibility that, you know, maybe he's like Taylor Walker. Look at Taylor Walker this year. He's the key forward in the top side in the competition, very attacking side, and he has up games, down games. I really wonder where he's at. John, I know you're a big fan of Handsome Tom and the Supercoach format. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I totally agree. I like that analogy with the Taylor Walker part there. Again, it's that for a key forward, it's all about supply and demand. I mean, you look at someone like Josh Kennedy, that midfield's serving it to him, laces out all the time. So he's getting the shots on goal. He's getting the marks, the disposals. Tom Lynch is playing in a poor team and not getting that supply. So he's not getting the opportunity.
Well, I'll just say the same, but that's why I'm pointing out that he had the same inside 50s that he did the year before, and he just didn't clunk the marks. Is that him? More, is that the game? Is that attention from the defenders?
I think it's more attention from the defenders. We saw him come top five Coleman the previous year. They put more time into him. They know the Gold Coast midfielders are going to go to him, so why not stop that supply and make him look for somewhere else in that forward line? So I think he's going to be great value in your drafts next year. And you said he was, what, F3 and F4 in Supercoach and Dream Team. He's probably going to go down to even an F4 in Supercoach next year. I reckon you can get him there.
But I don't think he's going to be drafted after the 12th round.
Oh, God, no. I see him in that 8 to 12 round bracket.
What about you, Stassman?
He's a gun. And that's the bottom line. I think a few things changed for him this year. Firstly, he was given more responsibility. And as a young player, that is a unique challenge. So therefore, at times, you can start thinking about the whole team, the whole game plan, rather than just your game. I use as a reference, how long has Trek Conchon been captain of Richmond? All of a sudden, he's playing like a captain. He's turned his form around remarkably. And for a young gun, that added pressure can actually impact your personal game. Secondly, he did have a bit of an interrupted pre-season. And for those type of players, and we know what key forwards are like, it's confidence, builds success. And that club got put on the back foot pretty quickly in the season. I think we're all surprised after four or five rounds of how badly they were going, even though there was a glimmer of excitement early. And I think that created some further issues. Then we look at their injuries, the form, the don't draft me Gary Ablett, and talk about his lack of form early in the season, all those type of things and their form. It just meant it wasn't a year for an absolute gun to shine. Now, I'm quite confident and be quite happy if he's a bit of a bargain, but I don't think he will. I think the hype around Tom Lynch will continue because this boy is a jet. I don't like in AFL fantasy too many key position players, but a Tom Lynch, if you had him as your focal point at GWS, would be averaging over a ton. Now, it's only a matter of time before they bridge the gap from what Gold Coast is to what GWS is. I think it's probably, you know, the half point that they'll get to. And I think he's a 90 to 95 averaging forward. And I think that is quite valuable. And I think you're looking at your F2, possibly your F1 is what he turns out being. Full confidence in him. And yes, I can be a little bit over-supportive to those that I think are brilliant football players. That's what he is. My interest will be of how happy is he at Gold Coast and how correct are the rumours that he may be looking to head down to Melbourne.
Yeah, and I think that's the big question is, we know he's heading into a contract year. Also, let's not forget he's coming off a season-ending PCL injury. So we don't know what their sort of management's going to be like heading into that year. But the thing is, like you said, he's handsome Tom. He has a lot of attraction about him. If he's been drafted as an F1, early F2, I've got to be honest, I'm probably okay missing out. Like, at this stage, that feels a bit rich for my blood, even in Supercoach. So, anyway.
I'd back him in, but I probably wouldn't try to. I always go towards the mid-forwards first, because you don't know who's going to pop up on an annual basis. You grab a Jack McRae, and then your next line, I'm quite happy for a handsome Tom to be my F2.
Well, and we're saying that now, but I mean, I think we can have a pretty confident expectation of who's going to be in there, and for me, he's probably just not in that bracket. So
in the F1 or F2?
In the F1.
Yeah,
he might be. He might be an F2, but we'll wait and see who shakes out that way.
Key positions always a risk. A little less in Supercoach, of course, but key positions are always a risk.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, for your keeper leagues, maybe. He might be a great buy now target.
Yes, correct. Totally agree.
Anyway.
All right, gentlemen, I might move on to my first player. And my first disappointment, I mean, sorry, underachiever, is Dan Hand. Dan Hannabry. Now, I will say that I did say disappointment because I let it slip. Because in the Keeper League, as we all know, I won the Premiership, just in case those listeners didn't realise. But he was my first selection. Picked him up at pick 12. Dan Hannabry's ADP was 11, gentlemen. So actually quite high. I picked him up around the right mark. 94.4 was his average. So the first pick in a draft, if ADP is 11, is generally getting picked up as someone's first selection, and he was mine. 94.4 for your first selection. That's a drop of 14 points per game, gentlemen. That is an underperforming year. He was ranked 45, just out of the mids in AFL fantasy scoring. 45. So in a 12-team league, that's an M3, M4 level. It's bordering that line. Played 21 games, missing the last round, which could have hurt a few of his owners if they play the formats that play the grand final on the last round. Now, there's a few reasons why the form dropped, gentlemen. First and foremost, and Steve talks about building the scores, his lines or his markers dropped right across the board, with one exception, marking. So his marks increased by 0.2. But his possessions went down from 31.3 to 24.8. Now, if your marks are going up but your possessions are dropping, that means you're playing more of an outside game. You're getting on the wing rather than getting the run through the midfield. And that's a big concern for those that own him, especially when it comes to keepers, because I don't see him regaining that space, because Luke Parker, Josh Kennedy are going to be the bulls inside. And obviously what they want is that class and that speed through there. And that's why you see Zach Jones spending time, Isaac Heaney, and there's another jet through the defence that's going to start getting time through there. So I can't see his inside time actually increasing. So not only was his form down, he has a slight change of his role, which will make it harder to rack up those big numbers. So actually what we saw with Dan Hand was his ceiling went down. So he didn't have those spikes to get the average over the ton. So I can see him improving next year because I think the form and the club will be better, but likely to be around the 100 mark rather than the 110, which is the spike we've seen. So I think he turns into a 95 to 100 averaging midfielder. And yes, he'll have his good days, but I think he's going to be probably more consistent around the mark between 80 and 110 that he's scoring. What's your thoughts, gents?
Yeah, I'm in complete agreeance. And there's another name you left out of that midfield bunch, and that's George Hewitt, who we saw them really run through there quite a lot and have a number of roles. And you're right. I think that's his new game is on the outside. And I'll basically say right now he's basically a good Andrew Gaff. And we see with these outside players that they're quiet up, they're quiet down, and they're very dependent on being in a good team. And really the best outside midfielder I've seen over the last 10 years for fantasy is still Sidebottom. And there ain't too many really good ones out there. There's Gaff. I think Hannabury's going to be in that mix. And he should be drafted as such. And he should be a third midfielder next year.
Yep, M3, M4 is where he's at.
Yeah.
And that's why I traded him out.
Perfect summary. I was going to say he would have been perfect M3, M4 for next year in both formats, even your super coach. So, as you said, the outside game is where it's at. And you said it best, Steve, he's a better Andrew Gaff.
Sure.
Oh, so Steve says it best now, hey?
In terms of when it comes to super coach, yeah, because you don't play that fancy fandangled game, do you?
You know, that's
all right. I dumb it down.
King bolt.
Yeah, just gonna bring it down a bit. But my first underperformer for the year, he's been a fantasy beast for pretty much since his second year, and that's Heath Shaw. He had an ADP of 26 this year in Ultimate Footy, so he's right up there. He's probably be your D1, D2, depending on which format you're playing. Certainly, if it's your super coach, he's your D1. But some interesting stats for Heath Shaw. He lost 65 possessions, 30 marks, and 24 tackles this year. So to average it out over the year, that's 3 possessions, 1.5 marks, and a tackle a game. So when you're talking about building scores, as Steve does, Heath Shaw's a kicker. And so if he's losing 3 kicks a game, those intercept marks coming in and that defensive pressure, that's a lot. I mean, he was averaging 106 in Supercoach, 101 in Dream Team last year, and that's dropped to 83 in Supercoach and 80 in Dream Team. I was just talking about the kicks. They went from 503 last year down to 393, so he's not getting those kicks anymore. His handballing went up from 77 to 122, so almost doubled there. And you've got the likes of Zach Williams, Nick Haynes, and Nathan Wilson all coming into that team. We've seen Zach Williams taking a lot of the kick-ins, as well as Nathan Wilson and Haynes. They're all spreading it around, especially with Heath Shaw turning 32 next year. Just getting a bit long in the tooth. They're giving the young kids a go. So he's slowly he's lost the mojo, I guess, and those 100 averaging days, I think they're gone for old Heath Shaw. 80, 83, I can see him pushing it slightly back up to maybe an 85, 86. But for me, he's D3 material, and I don't see him getting back to that D1, D2 like we have seen the previous years.
Gonski, gentlemen, absolutely Gonski. But remember, as soon as you're over 30, I don't talk to you anymore, pretty much like you guys. Well, I mean, I do talk to you, but with absolute contempt. Now, I will say that this year it was clear to me that firstly he had a change of role, and then he seemed to get the role back, but he couldn't produce what he had previously. So I think part of that is maybe he changed his role because athletically he's not where he used to be, and that happens to us all. At some point we start to get a little bit slower. We start to be a little less agile because our bodies change as we get older. So I'm actually thinking that somewhere along the line that the Giants, as every organisation would do all the testing, which we always hear about the 2Kers. Everyone's, you know, setting a new personal best every training session and every pre-season. But they'll also do all the athletic testing, so they can test the strength, the agility, the speed. That'll be done constantly, but that'll be kept in-house. And now I've got that feeling that they've noticed a change in him, so therefore that's the decision of, you're still very important to us because of your skill, the way you attack out of defence, but also your knowledge with all those young defenders around. And I reckon they've changed the role to match where his body's at. Does that make sense, gentlemen?
Yeah, sure.
And then once a few injuries and replacements and rotations change, they've had to force him to go back to the role that he was previously doing. And because of those slight changes in his athletic ability, he hasn't been able to replicate what he's done in previous years. That's just my thought.
Yeah, look, I'm really torn on this one, to be honest. I'm not quite sure where I'm sit. I'm with you 100% Statesman that, like, I'll watch GWS every game this year, and what I actually saw wasn't an athletic change in Heath Shaw, but the skill actually just wasn't there. I'm not sure what the numbers suggest, but he just looked like he was missing targets off his boot left, right and centre, whereas we know that's been the hallmark of Heath Shaw's game. Now, my big problem going into next year is that there's so much stink over Heath Shaw. Does he actually fall in drafts, or does he retain? Because there's only been one person in your own who's been burnt by Heath Shaw this year. Do the 9 or 11 other owners go, oh, I'll grab some Heath Shaw in the 5th round? Because if all the reports suggest that Nathan Wilson's on the way out of town. Now, GWS seem very comfortable having Zach Williams and Nick Haynes and Adam Tomlinson being their halfbacks. Does that mean that Heath Shaw stays as more of a lockdown role, or will they move to have him be more of a rebounding defender? So I can see the upside. And to be honest, like, I don't actually think that Heath Shaw was as horrendous as people thought if he was drafted with that mindset that, yes, he's just a low-end D2. Now, you drafted him to be the best defender, and he clearly wasn't that. So if we shifted our mindset to say, hey, look, he's just going to be an 80s averaging defender, which is fine. You need that in your team. You might not be disappointed next year. That's kind of where I'm sitting on Heath Shaw. And I think personnel will play a big part in how he should be drafted.
I do agree with that, but with the comment with regards to the skill, you actually don't lose the skill, and he's obviously a person that's been a full-time footballer for a long period of time. But what you actually do, if you're losing your athletic ability, it gets your mind thinking, I could be getting run down here. So if there's that inferred pressure, which can be generated just by yourself, knowing that you need to be quicker than you used to be because you're not athletically as quick as you are, that puts pressure on your skills, if that makes sense. And that's why defence is a hugely important part of the game, because you've create inferred pressure, then your opposition make more skill errors because they think that they're under more pressure than what they are.
Oh, look, if that's the case, then that's the case. I've never seen Heeshaw miss 30-metre kicks like that before. It is athletically.
Disposal efficiency was actually up 3%, so...
Wow. There you go.
Well, but that doesn't mean anything. Like, are they handballs? Well, like, his kick to handball ratio is down. That can be taken a number of ways.
Yeah. I'd stay clear. If he's sitting there available, VT4, pick him, but tap.
Now, Steve, who is your second underperforming forward?
Well, fan favourite of the show, and unfortunately, it's a guy I was...
Cam! You're not saying this about Cam.
I'll never say a bad word about Cam. Unfortunately, it was the 18th drafted forward heading into this season, and that was Mr. Donuts Motlop.
He was the 8th? That's low-hanging fruit, man. Come on.
Look, and I'll get to why he makes the list in the next. But he was drafted as the 18th highest forward, ADP of 94 on Ultimate Footy. Okay, so
that's an F2.
That's an F2. Okay, and that's why.
Wow.
Because when I run through these numbers, by finishing position, he was the 96th averaging forward on Dream in Ultimate Footy. And the 78th averaging forward on Supercoach. So he was basically unrosterable. Down 13 Dream Team points per game and down 10.7 Supercoach per games. And as the guys have mentioned, I always talk about score build. He was only down one disposal per game. He was only down 0.3 tackles per game. He was down 0.6 goals per game. But his kick to handball ratio shifted from over 2.1 to almost even, and his marks dropped 1.3 per game. Now, we noticed one thing about Stephen Motlop, and that he had a particularly good final series. I think you gentlemen would absolutely agree with that.
Totally agree.
Okay, and what was the one thing that Geelong did in the finals that was different to their home and away season campaign, if you can say it off the top of their head?
Get smashed in contested ball.
Yeah, it was actually ball control. Sorry. It was ball control. They controlled the ball. They had huge marks per game. These guys were in the bottom half in the last 2 years in marks per game. Now in the finals, they controlled the ball because that's the way you beat Sydney. They controlled the ball because that's the way you attempt to win against their finals opponents.
And he's got pace, so therefore he can make space, so therefore he's available to be used.
And that's absolutely correct, because winning the contested ball is not his game. Now, we know he can, if you're down in marks and you're playing, like, his best games are against Adelaide, they're against Hawthorn. That was where his best games were, because Geelong know how to win those games in a different manner. Now, can Stevie Motlop bounce back to be a viable fantasy option? I actually think he really can be, because we know he's probably out of Geelong because they apparently want Gary Ablett and Jake Stringer and whichever other free agent is available. If he goes to a Hawthorn, if he goes to a Carlton, a team that preach ball control, he's absolutely fantasy viable, and he will be free in your drafts. I also think he was partly a victim of Menegola's emergence. We thought with Josh Caddy going out of Geelong midfield / half forward line, he would be a beneficiary, but unfortunately, Sam Menegola was basically Josh Caddy on steroids for fantasy purposes. I drove down Narrative Street. I saw the, you know, he was improved fitness. You got to wear your mistakes, statesman. This is a player who did have a 120 plus game during the season against Hawthorn. I think he can rebound. You know, what say you, buddy?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. If he went to a GWS, then I'd be pretty keen on him because of the way they use the footy, and I think he suits their game plan really well. I'm just interested to see where he ends up because we know more than likely he won't be at Geelong with their plans to get Ellett and Stringer. They will have to move on a couple of quality players. There'll be Motloff and Menzel. So I really have to wait to see where he's at and what type style they said. It's interesting you mentioned about Geelong's performance in the finals. And as soon as you mention that, that's when I come up going, of course, and with the pace, you can just grab the space. So I'd love to see a club like a Hawthorn who have for a long period of time used the football really well. I think that's the type of club that he'll perform really well at. So I'll wait and see to see which club he ends up with, to be quite honest with you. So I'm a hold on Motlop and probably would avoid him, to be quite honest with you, at this stage, unless I see something that changes my mind.
Not even a burning up the track in the pre-season like we saw him this year?
No.
My big worry is that he does go to a club like Port Adelaide that just preach
speed.
Territory.
Yep.
The preach territory. That'd be the death knell for him.
Yep, agreed. And I think they're interested.
That's the problem.
And the Bulldogs too.
Oh, Christ, no.
Yeah, but you don't know what position it would be. Fullback.
It'd be another defender. The words right out of my mouth.
I'll move on to my second one, gentlemen, because we've got a time frame to get through tonight. Jack Stephen is my second disappointment. Underperformer. 93.8 average. That's a drop of 10.6 per game. ADP of 22. Hey. So the reality is he's a M1, M2, giving you an average of 93.8. He was 47th ranked in the midfielders, so they're the people that have only got mid as the option, which is an M3 and slant M4. Played 20 games and averaged only 86 in his last five rounds, so it was a huge disappointment during the finals. And, of course, as we know, he's always going to be, while they've got the list they've currently got, one of the targets for the Taggers. Now, on a score bill, gentlemen, he only went down one kick per game. He didn't change with handballs, but for the first time in his career, he had more handballs than he had kicks, and that is a concern. Down overall in possessions by 1.6 per game, but for the second year running, he has dropped in tackles. So he's gone from 2 years ago where he peaked at scoring over 110, of having seven tackles a game to being in the mid-fours 2 years later. Now, I've got no doubt the emergence of that list, and, of course, talking about one of the many Jacks they've got coming in from GWS, that he's the tackling machine. He's the enforcer there at that squad. So they want him to do more work on the outside because he can use the football and can use his pace. Being a quality ball user outside, you're a tag target. Like Gaff, like Hanbury, you're a tag target, and you're not going to get the contested ball. And if you are getting under pressure by the opposition, that's when you're going to go the hands more than the kick. And that's the reflection of why his kick-to handball ratio has changed. So I would assume now you're going to see him between 90 and 100. He has got a magnificent ceiling. So there's going to be games that he'll just blow it away, but there will also be games where he's just getting 80 because the pressure's on him. But I'll see him less on the inside because they've got the enforcers to do that task, and they're working very hard to get more midfield talent.
Steve. Yeah, and I'll just add on to that, and I agree with everything you've said. And I also think another point is that with the emergence of Billings and Gresham, they don't put him forward anymore. His scoreboard impact has dried right up.
Correct.
Whereas he has hit that in previous years, so I'm in complete agreement. I'm very worried about Jack Stephen as a fantasy asset moving forward.
His goals halved this year.
Huge.
Moving on to my second underperformer. I had high hopes for this guy. That's one Bernard Vince from Melbourne. coming in... Oh, come on, Statesman. Don't have to put that much crap on me every single week. Coming off 92 averaging seasons last year, that's dropped down to 74 in Supercoach and 78 in Dream Team. His disposals dropped from 534 down to 403, so just not getting the possessions as he was in the previous year. And, Steve, you actually brought it up just in a conversation during the preseason that one Michael Hibbard will be taking the Bernie Vince role, and that's exactly what's happened. So Michael Hibbard's now playing that intercept runoff halfback role, whereas Bernie Vince now is just floating around that defence, just trying to get a cheap kick and do something. But he's just basically making up the numbers. I mean, we see Harms and all those guys in that defence now. There's not much room for him. So he's not getting the midfield time as we saw previously as well. He had one game against GWS where he was playing the midfield for three. He played three quarters in the midfield, scored over the ton. But you got blokes like Viney, Oliver Jones in that midfield. He's not getting midfield time. So he's in his 30s now. He signed off a one-year contract. I'm just really worried about Bernie Vince, and I see him as undraftable for next year. I mean, he has, this is his scoring breakdown over the year in both formats. Three tons in Supercoach, one in the 90s and one in the 80s. And he had three tons in Dream Team, three in scores in the 90s and 180 in Supercoach, Dream Team, sorry. So the scores weren't there. Everything else was 50s and 60s. So he's just not getting the hands on the balls. And this is for a guy who had an ADP of 56.
No thanks from me.
Yeah, he's basically become a role player. I mean, would you be blown away if you saw Bernie Vince running around for Casey next year?
Not at all.
So that's kind of where he's at, and I think how he should be drafted next year.
Totally agree.
Absolutely. And if you are loving the show, do check us out. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Limsid, Pod Paradise. We're everywhere at the moment. Thank you, everyone, for getting us to 50 ratings on iTunes. We do have another review this week. It's from
Honestly, I saw this. This is not a review. This guy's left
us about three reviews. It's a puff piece. That's what it is. It's from the Statesman's arch nemesis.
Can I just butt in? Whoever left us, whoever dropped the 2-star rating, just contact us. We'll give you a listener league spot. I love it.
Yeah, fair enough.
But Weebot got big cock says, some of the spelling on this, I think it's been auto-corrected. Love that these lads concentrate on draft and keeper leagues. Way too many pods out there on the salary cap fantasy game. In draft, everyone has a value. Yes, even Reece Palmer. Statesman does a fantastic job and at statistic analysis of keeper draft. He is also saltier than a pack of Macca's French fries when his fantasy team chokes in the finals after being the only unbeatable side all year. Great interviews from current and highly relevant players this season, such as Cam Peterson. Sadly, no fantasy sisters with dildos, but maybe he may a guest appearance in one of the season shows. Cheers, boys. So thank you.
Excellent.
We got big cocks for that review. Steve, who have you got there for your last underperforming forward?
Okay, so before I get into the last underperforming forward, did you want me to run quickly through the top 20 drafted forwards? Just as a bit of candy for you.
Yep.
So first forward, Jack McRae. Second forward, Nick Riewoldt.
Ugh. Ooh.
Third forward, Luke Dalhouse, who was a candidate for this show, but
wow.
I'll let him off the hook because he had a good super coach year. But Buddy Franklin in at number four, Toby Green number five, Isaac Smith number six, JJK seven, Tom Lynch from Adelaide. Jack Gunston. Handsome Tom. Josh Caddy. Isaac Heaney. Jared Roughhead, surprisingly.
Wow.
Brett Deledio.
Ooh.
In at 77 ADP.
Ali Banana.
No, he was outside the top. He was like 106.
Okay.
Devin Smith at 83. Took Miller at 86. That hurt. Paddy Ryder at 90. Stevie Motlop, 94. 99, Jack Billings, and also 99, Cyril Rioli.
Jack Billings, the best bargain there.
Yes, absolutely. So of that list, I chose for my last one, Josh Caddy, who was drafted as the forward number 11. And I actually think he's kind of likely to retain forward status. Yes, the fact he was one of Statesman's boys heading into the year did make him extra appealing. I will say quietly, Devin Smith, if he moves to another club or he gets an inside midfield role, he will tear it up.
Yeah.
The most... I don't think that matters. He had the most fantasy-unfriendly role of all time at GWS, so good luck to him. But anyway, speaking about Josh Caddy, drafted as F11, finished by average in Ultimate Footy as forward 64 and Super Coach as forward 59. Oh, yeah. Only had the one ton in both formats and had a nice drop.
And it was big, too.
It was a huge ton, and you would have been feeling great about playing him the next week where he scored you 11. All right. So, anyway, speaking about 11, he dropped 11 Dream Team points by average between 2016 and 2017, down to 74.5 Dream Team points per game. Dropped to 12.6 Supercoach points per game, down to 76.3. Failed to play 20 games. The midfield role that we anticipated didn't happen at all. Well, sort of did, but not really. Way down on tackles and disposals per game. Worst part, time on ground. Very comparable. Didn't really suffer in any way there. So, for mine, we just have to shift expectations on Josh Caddy. And this is kind of where he is. We know he had the big score at the end of the year, and he did have the terrible score at the end of the year. I kind of think that the fair thing to do would be just to add them together, average them out, and give him 75.
Agreed.
So, look, if he's your last forward, F5, sorry, when you draft, I know different players have different team structures, then I think that's a fair thing to do. And if something happens to a Prestia, a Martin, a Cochin, whatever, or maybe a Lambert, and he gets to move back inside, then maybe you're doing all right, but I certainly wouldn't draft him any higher than that. Let's just shift our expectations on Josh Caddy.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And I'll let you know, in the Keeper League, I traded out my first pick defender, first pick midfielder, first pick forward, which was Josh Caddy, and delisted, because no one would trade for him, delisted my first pick ruckman, which was Tom Hickey, in the Keeper League, which proves your guy's point that you never win a league in the draft. You've got to be working it all year. But Josh Caddy, I totally agree. I got excited, change of club. I will say with Josh Caddy, I got excited when he left Gold Coast and went to Geelong too, and think I picked him up in formats as well. He's burnt me twice. He'll never burn me again.
Yeah, and sometimes that just happens with players. Like,
yep, true.
You know,
if he was a full-time mid, he'll score well.
They don't all have that role though, do they?
That's exactly right.
So. Would he move on to another club, do you think, or do you think Richmond retain him as depth?
Well, when he becomes premiership superstar, Josh Caddy.
Correct. I think he's loving it, even though all the talk was about getting in the midfield. Speaking about midfield, I'll move on to my last player, and he's here for a bit of a burn for Jono too, which is Mr. Tom Scully. An average of 81.9. That's a drop of 14.4 points per game. His ADP was 103, gentlemen, so just outside that zone. 79th ranked midfielder, so he's your M6 and M7. played 21 games and only averaged 69 in the last five home and away games, gentlemen. That's waiver wire material for finals. His time on ground, as we know, can't improve. His role will be challenged with the top end players developing. You're talking Hopper, Kelly and co. Would be an 80s average player from here on in. Clearly, Jono, he's not a keeper. So you shouldn't be trading him in your keeper league. Bring him
too
in.
Too late.
You're going to delist him anyway, because there's one part that you're going to know. He's going to remain a mid. He can't get any more time on ground. And he's only averaged over 90 once in his career. He's just about to turn 27. We've seen the peak of Tom Scully. Delist him, Jono. It's a smart thing to do.
Well, he could move forward, get DPP, and I'll be pretty happy.
No. He'll be on the ground for
the long
98%
game,
statement. Of the
it's
time,
a long game.
And he'll be playing on the wing.
Do you reckon he's going the way of Ryan Griffin, just out the door?
No. He'll keep on playing
eventually,
on the wing.
Eventually, out the door.
He's going to be a huge, important player for GWS, but he's just not going to be a fantasy star. His running is outstanding, gentlemen.
Seriously, if the game was seven quarters long, he would be the best player going.
Correct. He'll be pick number one. He should be on the waiver wire once you've delisted your 12, Jono. So that was the point of having him on there. It was a bad call. Who did you trade him out?
Sydney went Josh Kennedy.
Bum bum.
I'd take Tom Scully as a bench player.
I would be keeping Josh Kennedy, not delisting Tom Scully.
Well, have you seen Jono's team? He's not playing for the now, buddy.
No, I'm 5, 6, 7 years away. I'm the long game.
Okay, give us your last one, Jono.
That's kind of harsh. He started out, his first half was actually pretty good, Tom Scully, but then when the players came back, it was a bit of a problem.
But you also saw last year, their game plan was he stuck to the fat side and just got it out to him, and he was the launcher last year. So
he's so much better in Supercoach than Dream Team.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great.
But if they go back to using him as that launcher from last year, I can see him getting back up to where he was. So.
But the problem is other teams have figured out their ball movement.
Well, that's true. That's true as well.
He'll be an 80s scoring mid, and it may get to high 80s. But really, it's just not that relevant in a 12-team keeper. He'd be worthwhile as your M6 or M7. Not a problem, but he's not a keeper.
Mate, in my team, that's M2, baby. I got nothing.
Sam Dockett.
Jesus, what's in that red wine? Is that just honesty juice?
It's the second bottle, but...
Oh, God.
No, it's first bottle. My last underperformer, it's the one and only Jason Johannesson. After having a breakout year last year where he averaged 93 in Dream Team, 94 in Supercoach, that plummeted down to 82 in Dream Team, 82 in Supercoach and 75 in Dream Team. He won the Norm Smith medal, and like any person who wins a Norm Smith medal or a team that wins a premiership, they put time into you, and that's exactly what they did to Jason. They worked out that he was the go-to man to rebound out of defence, so they put the tag on him where his scores just plummeted, where his best scores in that period were 82 in Supercoach and 64 in Dream Team. He has some soft tissue injury concerns where we've seen him miss a few games. I know he did the big hammy, I think it was last year, where he missed a fair few weeks. But here's the interesting one. All his stats went up this year, bar one. That was his marks. The marks were pretty much halved. They went down from 112 to 58. So we know Jason's the rebounder off the halfback there, and he intercepts to a degree. But when you're going from 6.6 per game down to 2.9 per game, that's a big drop for him. And
gentlemen, I've got to say this about JJ. We were sold something that wasn't real. And I'll make this point. He had one breakout year, but his breakout year, he only played 13 games. Out of those 13 games, he only scored 3 tons. One was 144, which lifted his average.
It would have been in the first few weeks as well, wasn't it?
No, that was round 22 against Essendon, and we're talking Essendon without all the guns. He scored 121 against Frio, 113 against St Kilda, and 144 against Essendon. If you link up, and obviously we know he got injured in that round 4 game, but then he come back round 15. If you go through from round 3 to round 21, those games, guess what he averaged? In the 70s. Guess what he averaged the year before that? In the 70s. Guess what he averaged this year? In the 70s. So we've got someone that everyone thought was possibly a D1, D2, averaging 93 as he did last year, but he did that with just 3 big scores. Anyone can have a good game.
Yeah, look, I kind of, I talk about score building. If your scores, if you've dropped 4 marks per game, I'm quite interested in that, because to me, if you're a defender and you kick Bob Murphy and Matty Boyd out of that team, to me, that screams opportunity. Now, maybe they do tag him. Now, maybe that happens. But to me, that's just a green light for opportunity. Now, if people are going to go drafting him as a D1 or a D2 or whatever, but if he starts sliding, I'm really interested in that upside. And you talk about those scores. Don't forget that game he got injured. He was on 99 at half time against Sydney 2 years ago. So this guy has got a genuine ceiling. We saw this year he had the potential to go forward and kick goals. I'm not saying he doesn't have bust potential, but what D3, D4 doesn't have bust potential? I'm just saying there. And also look at the pressure that the Bulldogs midfield applied. Now, their team wasn't better because they applied less pressure this year. But that's just a fact that happens. And defenders are going to score better and mark better when there's less, when there's more pressure in the midfield. So, to me, some of it comes down to what happens with the Bulldogs midfield. But I'd be more than happy to pick JJ up as a slider. Can he bounce back to is he going to average 93? Probably not. But if he averages high 80s, I'd be very happy with that.
Six AFL fantasy tons in his career out of 80 games.
Not everyone. This is the thing. I was listening. I just want to bring this little joke up because I thought about this little joke. Whilst I was listening to the what the hell was that show where we were talking about something or other? Statesman was talking about the last 3 years' performance. Oh, it was the Keep Trade Cut show.
Yep.
Right, and Statesman was bringing up Joel Selwood's year from 3 years ago where there was literally no other midfielders and he was the guy getting tagged into oblivion and he had a bad year. I felt like a superannuation ad because all I could think was past performance is not a reliable indicator of the future. Oh, Jono's dropped out. Oh, jeez, Jono doesn't have any super, I guess.
No super. But that was the last player. So, a summary. Would you pick many of them that we discussed?
It all comes down to value. To me, that's what it all comes down to. Like, if Steve Motlop's there in round 22, would I pick him? Probably. Would I pick him in round 15? Probably not. Would I pick Jack Stephen in round 6 again? Oh, I tweeted out on draft day when I drafted Jack Stephen in round 5 or 6. Ha, ha, ha. Look at these idiots. I've just got
a bargain.
I've got a bargain, and everyone tweeted, what draft are you in? These idiots. And, it all seems different. And value is the great indicator of where things lie. I guess I would probably... I think Motlop and Caddy would be the ones I'd have a hard time drafting out of the bunch. But that's only because I feel forwards are particularly replaceable and particularly predictable.
And I would probably avoid Jono's defenders as well. I want to see JJ actually do something consistently. The other two were just old. So Shaw and Bernie Vince, I'll probably avoid, leave alone, let others take a risk on it, and I'll try and get your younger defenders that are opportunity to expand.
But I was going to say they're both over 30, so you wouldn't touch them anyway.
No, that's exactly right.
But if Heath Shaw's sitting there in round 11 in a redraft, you're probably going to grab him.
Yeah, possibly. But, yeah, there wouldn't be many. I'd rather look at someone that's got upside rather than someone that's on the slide down.
I'm just trying to make the case that in a draft, people slide.
If someone's an absolute bargain, I would pick up Tom Scully, but it'll be very, very late, and it'll be rather be my bench midfielder.
I get the feeling that's where you'll get Tom Scully, because I think that's where he tends to get drafted, because people, well, they see the history. And I think of the bunch, I think Handsome Tom could be the value, to be honest.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Totally agree. Yeah. And sorry, Jono, did we bore you to tears or something, mate?
No, my call dropped out, so I don't know what the hell happened. You guys just froze there for a second, and my call dropped out, so back in it. So, no, very funny jokes, Steve. Top notch.
Nailed it. Oh, gee, I'll go back to open mic comedy and go back to playing to seven people rooms.
Yeah.
You had a couple of good crowds at the bowls clubs.
Yeah, no. I had a good gig in... I had some good gigs. We did... I think the biggest I ever did was up in Ballarat. I was opening, and Dave Thornton was on, and we had a few hundred people in there. Did a few hundred people at the Comics Lounge a few times, so there were some good gigs in there in the run. But
all right, that just about wraps up the show for this week. Thank you very much for listening. We are going all year round, so please do check us out every single Wednesday. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that by checking us out on Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors and at Statesman33. Check out the Facebook page, The Draft Doctors there.
I just wanted to throw out just quickly, for anyone who wanted an update on the Draft Doctors NFL League, currently leading is Mrs. Fizz. Yeah, it's going well. It's going well. Really well.
Well, as we know in the NFL, just like any other sport, the injuries will happen, and use that waiver wire.
Yeah, well, that's the key. Fair play, thank you very much. Though, we might all be screwed.
Well, look what happened to Green Bay coming back from behind today. Doesn't she have Jordy Nelson in her team?
No, actually, I think I do. She might do.
Scored the winning. No, he didn't score the winning.
There's no scaling.
No scaling? Oh, okay. Fair enough. But thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.